This is Archer of Archer.com. Today is Tuesday, February 16th, 2010. On this episode of Archer Radio, I'm going to be playing a whole bunch of clips. I found, you know, mostly political stuff, found stuff that I wanted to share, and, you know, some people find them interesting and other people don't. So if you are not into the clip shows, then you should probably just skip this episode of Archer Radio. I would not be offended because I know not everybody likes the clips. However, if you do like the clips and you want to comment, I still need a phone call on the Google Voice line, and that phone number is 260-232-2072. And give me a call. All right, now I'm going to play the clips, and then I'll come back at the end. So listen to these clips.
You would head down to the courthouse to register to vote, if you dared. In order to register, you'd face an exam. It was sometimes called a literacy test, but it wasn't testing to determine necessarily if you could read or write. If you were black, the test was designed purely to afford a legalistic veneer of justification for denying you your constitutional right to vote. The questions weren't about ABCs. They were questions like this one from Alabama's literacy test in 1965. If a person charged with treason denies his guilt, how many persons must testify against him before he can be convicted? Do you consider yourself qualified to vote in this country? Can you answer that question? You want to hear it again? If a person charged with treason denies his guilt, how many persons must testify against him before he can be convicted? Or how about this one from the same test? In what year did the Congress gain the right to prohibit the migrations of persons to the states? Do you know the answer to that one? Again, these are from Alabama's literacy test in 1965. It was applied selectively, of course, to black voters to keep them from registering. If you lived in Georgia in 1958, you would have faced questions like this one. Who is the Solicitor General of the state judicial circuit in which you live? And who is the judge of such circuit? If such circuit has more than one judge, name them all. How'd you do on that one? Or how about this one? What does the Constitution of Georgia provide regarding the suspension of the writ of habeas corpus? If you wanted to vote in Georgia in 1958, those are the questions you would have to answer. But of course, not everyone would face those questions. The Board of Registrars had the sole authority to determine who got asked which literacy test questions and whose answers to those questions rendered them ineligible to vote. The idea was that black voters weren't being denied the right to vote based on race. That would be illegal. No, those voters just couldn't pass this literacy test. This isn't the plot of some kudzu and Klansman gothic short story. This isn't a theoretical for first-year law students. This isn't some State Department report on some tin pot dictatorship halfway around the world that we can't pronounce. This is American history. This is really, really recent American history, as in this lifetime for a lot of people, American history. And the opening night speech at the National Tea Party Convention this weekend proposed bringing the literacy test for voting back. And that proposal got a warm round of applause.
Mostly because I think we do not have a civics literacy test before people can vote in this country. People who could not even spell the word vote or say it in English put a committed socialist ideologue in the White House. Name is Barack Hussein Obama.
The whiplash wake-up point here is not that somebody with a record like Tom Tancredo's would suggest something like this. He's made a living out of this shtick for some time. What's important here is that a suggestion like that would be greeted with cheers from an American crowd. Hey, let's go back to the ways we used to keep black people from voting in this country.
Mostly because I think we do not have a civics literacy test before people can vote in this country.
Tom Tancredo, what an idea. The crowd there cheering the proposed return to literacy tests for voting. The day after Tom Tancredo's speech, one of the convention's organizers was asked his response to this proposal.
What do you think the message is when you're saying Obama voters did not pass a basic civics literacy test?
Well, you know, Tom Tancredo gave a fantastic speech last night. I think he's an amazing politician.
Amazing, yes. The Tea Party convention crowd that cheered the proposed return to literacy tests, the literacy tests that were used for 70 years to keep black Americans from voting, also hosted Sarah Palin as that event's keynote speaker.
The Republican Party would be really smart to start trying to absorb as much of the Tea Party movement as possible. Because this is the future of our country. The Tea Party movement is the future of politics.
The future. On September 12, 1895, the New York Times reported on the state of South Carolina's attempts to suppress the black vote. The article was titled, "Negroes Must Be Barred, White Supremacy Demanded by the South Carolina Convention." Among the things South Carolina was considering to preserve white supremacy, to prevent black people from voting, was something they called the Mississippi Plan, a plan which, quote, requires an educational qualification consisting of the ability to read or understand any section of the Constitution of the state, such ability to be determined by the registration commissioners. The New York Times explained at the time, again, this is 1895, that the result would wholly abolish the Negro majority and any immediate fear of it. And of course, that's exactly what happened. Literacy tests were how African Americans were kept from voting in this country for some 70 years. This isn't ancient history. The Alabama test I quoted from before, that's from 1965. These tests were one of the main targets of the Voting Rights Act, pushed by President Lyndon Johnson that same year.
The harsh fact is that in many places in this country, men and women are kept from voting simply because they are Negroes. Every device of which human ingenuity is capable has been used to deny this right. He may be asked to recite the entire Constitution or explain the most complex provisions of state law. And even a college degree cannot be used to prove that he can read and write. For the fact is that the only way to pass these barriers is to show a white skin.
President Johnson later signed into law a bill that he hoped would prevent what he called the systemic and ingenious discrimination of literacy tests for voting. There are African Americans who are members of Congress today who were not, during their lifetimes, allowed to vote because of literacy tests for voting. And now the Tea Party movement is applauding a proposal to bring literacy tests for voting back. And they are shocked and horrified to be called racist for doing so.
A professor at Fresno City College is under fire tonight for teaching Christian beliefs as science in a health class. The ACLU wants the college to take action against the instructor. Action News reporter Gene Higginson joins us live from FCC with the lessons creating the controversy. Gene?
That's right, Liz. There are about 20,000 students at Fresno City College. They come from all religious beliefs, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Hindu, Sikh, Buddhist, just to name a few. But if they take Health One from instructor Brad Lopez, they'll find out they're using the Christian Bible as scientific text. Students say Fresno City College instructor Brad Lopez's beginning health class relies on the Bible to teach biology.
He started off with asking, was Jesus haploid or diploid, biological term, and he directed us to go to the Bible for our proof and to write a paper on it.
Trying to figure out Christ's chromosomes may have been unusual, but some students say Lopez offended them when he said homosexuality was a disease.
I was very, very upset about the homosexuality part, to think that this man would be telling me that my gay and lesbian friends, which I have quite a few of, are ruining the world, that are degrading society.
Students say Lopez also equates abortion with murder and uses the Bible as proof.
Lopez admitted as much in a recent address he made at a gathering at Fresno's People Church, which was recently posted online.
Well, you should see the eyes. I wish you could sit next to me and see the eyeballs get that big. Hey, you can't read that in school. Well, that may be true for K through 12, but that doesn't exist in college yet. So if you see me strung up somewhere, you'll know what happened.
The American Civil Liberties Union disagrees and wants Lopez to teach and not preach.
Well, we're asking Fresno City College to ensure that that all of its health instruction is unbiased and medically accurate, and it needs to stop religious indoctrination from taking place in the classroom under both the federal and state constitutions.
In response to a letter the ACLU sent to the school, Fresno City College issued a statement saying, "The college takes its non-discrimination and prohibition of harassment policies seriously, investigates alleged violations, and takes appropriate actions to enforce compliance. Beyond that, we don't comment on personnel matters for confidentiality reasons."
Now, the students we talked to tell us they have complained to administrators, and administrators acted like they've heard these complaints before over several years and really done nothing about it. Now, the ACLU says that Lopez did send a letter to the administrators in response to complaints saying he did not believe in separation of church and state. We have made several unsuccessful attempts today and tonight to contact Brad Lopez. The ACLU has given the college 1 week to come up with a response and come up with a solution to this teaching problem. Reporting live from Fresno City College, Gene Hagenson, ABC 30 Action News.
Nation, folks, it wasn't just a big weekend for one of the two teams in the Super Bowl. Two teams? Yes? Just two? Okay. It was also a big weekend for Sarah Palin. She was in Nashville giving a rousing speech to a for-profit convention of the most important grassroots movement in the country, the National Tea Party Convention. Little known fact, folks, the Boston Tea Party also turned a profit. Hence their slogan, no taxation without representation, but there is a two-drink minimum. Now, Palin selflessly volunteered her time and her bank account number, and she was worth every penny of her $100,000 speaking fee. Just listen to her bring it hot and hard to the supporters of President Obama.
Now, a year later, I got to ask those supporters of all that, how's that hopey-changey stuff working out for you?
Ha-ha, nailed them. Finally, a slogan for her next presidential run, Palin 2012, abandon all hope that anything will ever change. Oh, folks. Boom, boom, boom. Kong, 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 kong. And the nailing kept coming.
This is about the people, and it's bigger than any king or queen of a tea party. And it's a lot bigger than any charismatic guy with a teleprompter.
Ha, 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 ha. Now, of course, folks, the Blago Chatosphere has been giving Palin heat for zinging Obama over his teleprompter just because she herself used a handoprompter.
We've got to start reining in the spending. We have got to jumpstart these energy projects that, again, we've heard so much about.
Oh, big deal. Writing notes on your hand shows she's an average Jane, not like those elites and their memory. So, what did she write? She started with core beliefs. Energy, budget cuts. She crossed out budget and wrote tax. And she brings it home with lift American spirits. I mean, I write basic information on my hand all the time. See? This way, you know, I figure out what this fleshy thing is up here. I remember I have a thumb. It's for those times when I'm doing this, and I can't, you know, I'm trying to do this, and I can't quite get something up like that. I go like, oh yeah, thumb. Also, it reminds me to give Sarah Palin a big thumbs up for standing up for the little guy, Rush Limbaugh. Last week, Palin rightfully demanded the resignation of White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel for calling liberal Democrats f***ing retarded. Well, El Rushbo used the R word himself when talking about liberal Democrats. Jim?
Our political correct society is acting like some giant insults taking place by calling a bunch of people who are retards, retards. So now there's going to be a meeting. There's going to be a retard summit at the White House.
But Palin explained to Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday why that was okay.
Rush Limbaugh was using satire to bring attention to what this politically correct...
But he used the R-word.
Using satire. I didn't hear Rush Limbaugh calling a group of people whom he did not agree with effing retards. And we did know that Rahm Emanuel, it's been reported, did say that. There's a big difference there.
Thank you. Big difference. It was satire. Listen to Rush talk about the Democrats again.
Our political correct society is acting like some giant insults taking place by calling a bunch of people who are retards, retards. So now there's going to be a meeting. There's going to be a retard summit at the White House.
It's so subtle, you see? So many layers. And Sarah Palin knows that it is okay to call someone a retard if, like Rush, you clearly don't mean it. Which is why we should all come to her defense and say, Sarah Palin is a f***ing retard. Get it? You see? It's satire. By the way, this explains the note that was on her other hand. Retard sometimes funny.
Okay, don't ask, don't tell. You're a former defense secretary. Should this policy be repealed?
20 years ago, the military were strong advocates of don't ask, don't tell when I was secretary of defense. I think things have changed significantly since then. I see that Don Mullen, or Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has indicated his belief that we ought to support a change in the policy. So I think my guess is the policy will be changed.
And do you think that's a good thing? I mean, is it time to allow lesbians to serve openly in the military?
I think the society has moved on. I think it's partly a generational question. I'm reluctant to second guess the military in this regard because they're the ones that have got to make the judgment about how these policies affect the military capability of our units. And that first requirement that you have to look at all the time is whether they're still capable of achieving their mission, and does the policy change, i.e. putting gays in the force, affect their ability to perform their mission. When the chiefs come forward and say, we think we can do it, then it strikes me that it's time to reconsider the policy, and I think Admiral Mullen said that.
Now with our political roundtable, let's talk about the Obama agenda. And you may not have known this or heard about it, but we had a fair amount of snow here in Washington over the past couple of weeks. Here is a cartoon that really captures the nexus between government and weather. Huge snowstorm. One guy says Washington is completely paralyzed. The other one says, and then came this snowstorm. And here we are, David Brooks, with a domestic agenda right now. And what's leading this off? It's not health care at the moment. It is a jobs bill. And there seemed to be bipartisan consensus on this. And now Majority Leader Harry Reid pulled it back, made it a much narrower bill, about $15 billion, mostly of tax breaks, to get people back to work. Is this going to go anywhere?
It'll go somewhere. But if this was your week to hate Washington, this was a good week for you. Because we got this bipartisan bill that emerged in the Senate, filled with pork and all sorts of things that people hate. Fine. But at least the White House signs off on it. But Harry Reid decides, after the White House has signed off on it, that it's the liberals in his party have objected. So we got the pork, and he decides, I'm getting rid of the whole thing, or at least scaling it back to something about $15 billion a year. So then we get partisanship. And then on top of that, it's basically pointless. $15 billion a year in a multi-trillion dollar economy is nothing. We'll create no jobs. So we had partisanship, pork, and pointlessness all in one bill. And so this was a bad week for Washington.
Congressman Schock, where are the Republicans going to be on this?
Well, look, I think, unfortunately, it's more of the same. I mean, all of this talk about bipartisanship, and yet the rhetoric doesn't match the reality. As David Brooks mentioned, there was some Republicans who worked with the Democrats in the Senate to come up with a jobs bill, only to have their leadership put the kibosh on it. We are for creating long-term economic growth. You do that by incentivizing entrepreneurialism, risk-taking, and investment. You do that through creating certainty in the markets, through certain tax incentives, and that's where we'll be on a jobs bill.
So it sounds like you like what the Democrats are doing here.
Well, I don't like all the pork that was in the bill. The $787 billion stimulus bill, the largest spending bill in history, one of the reasons why it didn't create long-term growth is it didn't have stimulative tax cuts in it, but rather a lot of pork and spending.
Which are the least stimulative things in the stimulus. I mean, when you assess what creates jobs in the stimulus band, it's the tax cuts that were put in order to try to win Republican votes that didn't come anyway that are the least effective thing in the stimulus bill. So the theory doesn't match the practice here. But you, I mean, you in your district,
well,
just this week, you were at a community college touting a $350,000 green technology education program, talking about how great that was going to be for your district. You voted against the bill that created that grant. And so that's happening a lot with Republicans sort of taking credit for things that Democratic bills do, and then Republicans simultaneously touting their votes against them and trashing them. That's, I think, a problem that needs to be resolved within your caucus because, I mean, you seem like a very nice person, but that's a very hypocritical stance to take.
Well, Rachel, with all due respect, I can assure you Republicans were not consulted on a stimulus bill. That bill was filed at 11 p.m. The night before the 10:30 a.m. we began debating it. None of our amendments were considered. There was no debate, no bipartisanship on that bill.
Let me look at it, Rachel, which is the question about you. You've called for spending caps out of Washington,
sure.
But to Rachel's point, does that mean that you will not accept any federal money that comes the way of your district?
No, I think that argument that liberals are making is absolutely ridiculous. With all due respect, Rachel, does that mean you're going to give back your Bush tax cuts that you continue to rail against? The fact of the matter is our country operates and governed by a majority, and I, along with almost all of my Republican colleagues and a good number of Democrats, have voted against the stimulus, the omnibus, all of this runaway spending. But we've lost those battles in the House. And at the end of the day,
but you'll take the money for your district.
At the end of the day, my constituents and their children and grandchildren will be on the hook for the debt that's being created by this majority, and they deserve to have their fair share of federal spending.
Harold,
I was in Congress for 10 years. I can tell you, your party ran up a lot of debt. Matter of fact, we grew from 8 years that President Bush was there. The rate of growth exceeded any other presidents in the history of the nation. So we find ourselves
at
a moment.
This one.
Well, no, this president, he's only been in a year. I know you all want to blame him for everything, but you can't blame him for quite everything yet. And I don't want to blame President Bush, but we got to put it in context. Two, I love it when Republicans talk about the desire to come around the table and work together. It was a Republican-Democrat thing that happened in the Senate. It was Grassley and Baucus, and it was Hatch and Schumer. That was the centerpiece of the stimulus bill. The jobs bill was working its way through the Senate. But it was McConnell who told Reid the other day, I will not work to collect any votes for this bill if you bring it to the floor. There has to be a genuineness and a sincerity here. Republicans say they want deficit reduction and deficit control. They vote against a deficit commission. I do hope President Obama will use an executive order to create a deficit commission in spite of what Republicans may say. You can't have it one day Monday in the morning and have a different message in the afternoon on Tuesday. I think it just has to be fair. Now, Democrats deserve some blame here, but Republicans have to be honest.
This conversation exemplifies what's wrong with Washington. It's like two guys fighting in the ocean to see who drowns first. I mean, it's both parties are responsible for the deficits, and both parties are responsible for the fiscal suicide. And if you look at the polls that came out, a whole bunch of polls came out this week, and they show both parties very negative. Unprecedented levels of distrust in Washington. Unprecedented, historically high levels of people who want to get rid of their member of Congress from both parties. A level of distrust of Washington that is absolutely unprecedented in American history. And it's because the two sides are trying to fight each other than actually do something bipartisan or actually do anything. And so bipartisanship has become a wedge issue, a way to make the other party look bad. So bipartisanship has been twisted into just another partisan ring.
But the issue is not bipartisanship qua bipartisanship. It's hypocrisy. I mean, if you are for PAYGO, if you're for a deficit commission, until the president of the other party comes around for it and then you're against it, we're not talking policy anymore. We're not talking about bipartisanship. You shouldn't be blamed for not getting Republican votes on that. That's hypocrisy. If you vote against the omnibus bill, if you complain about the omnibus bill, if you tout your vote against the omnibus bill, it is hypocrisy to then go to your district and go to a ribbon-cutting ceremony for something that's funded by the omnibus bill that you voted against. It's not just bipartisanship as a sort of platonic
virtue. I can pick up the Democratic points if Obama wants to say, I'm going to balance balance the budget and then say, but I won't cut taxes on the bottom 98%. Well, that's also somewhat hypocritical or inconsistent. Or if he says, I want bipartisan health care, but then invites the cameras into a bipartisan discussion and already has the plan he's going to come with out with after the health care summit, that's also slightly political.
David's right about one thing, and it's the bigger point for my party. I was astonished by what happened with the jobs bill also. We are in the majority. We have an obligation to govern. And the American people react and revolt when politicians feel like they know what voters want. Health care is important, but if we don't focus on jobs and jobs and jobs again, I think Vice President Biden was right. Democrats will suffer in the fall. The reality is families are having problems at home. Businesses are having problems running themselves, or should say people running them are having problems. And the reality is people are worried about their future. And ultimately, your point is the right one. I only make the point about the back and forth of it. There has to be some honesty about bipartisanship. You can't in the morning say you want it, in the afternoon
well,
do
everything. Let's talk about the prospect of bipartisanship when it comes to health.
All righty, so that is the end of the clip show. I hope that those clips did not bore you too badly. Hopefully some of you found those interesting and you will call the Google Voice line on the website 260-232-2072 and leave me a message so I can get something in the Google Voice mailbox. Anyway, that's all for today. I hope you had a great Tuesday. And until next time, boys and girls, bye.